So the panel asked the question, are you guys the panel then? Prime the pump. Yes, go ahead.
I'd like to know the phone number for the Rouge Patrol.
Absolutely. There are two associations, again. Thank you. There are two associations. There's the Castle Rouge Civic Association, and then there's the Castle Rouge Radio Patrol. The number for the Castle Rouge Civic Association is 313-405-9013. If you give me a moment, I'll get you the number directly to the Radio Patrol. I don't know if the Radio Patrol captain has forgiven me. I set him up with a Gmail account, and the wonderful thing about that is they will subscribe you a phone number that's tied to that account, and it's free, and it rings directly to your cell phone, so, you know. I don't know if my wife's forgiven me for signing up. And again, I will get the number. And annually, we do accept dues. As I indicated, we found out just this past Wednesday, I went to the post office, and our association members, they submit letters or concerns via mail or email. They submit their checks or dues payments. We request $25 per year. Benefit is you get to advertise in our newsletter, and it contributes to all of the wonderful things that we do. We have, apparently I skipped over an entire part of my speech, but we have annual events that we do, including a community-wide picnic and back-to-school rally, which is held the third week in August. And with that, we have all of our neighbors come out. They bring out their grills. We have activities and games for the kids and families. Last year we kind of broke the bank on a giant bounce house maze, but this year we're gonna do, you know, potato sack races, three leg races, egg toss. But, you know, things that are fun that everybody can participate and engage in, because at the age of 30, going through a bounce house in 95 degree weather is not fun. Also, in October, we do a trunk or treat on Halloween for the neighborhood children and children in the surrounding communities, you know, with the concerns about, you know, the rate of child predators and sex offenders. Unfortunately, in this neighborhood, since we moved here, has skyrocketed. When we initially moved to this neighborhood, we had one registered sex offender within a mile radius of this facility. And just as of last week, I think the number's up to 15. So in October, for the safety of our children, we decorate our cars and we park along Dell Street by the community park. And we have bonfires and we read stories and we hand out candy to the kids. That way they can have their fun and, you know, be in a safe and nurturing environment. And apparently my smartphone is smarter than I am. I'm trying to find this number for you. Anybody know any songs? It's very interesting as to where the name of Castle Rouge comes from. This neighborhood is located adjacent to the Rouge River, which runs along Outer Drive. So if you were to head out of the community the back way and go around Outer Drive to 96, you'll actually cross over the Rouge River. That's where the Rouge part comes from. As it relates to Castle, when this area was originally plotted as a part of Redford, it was known as Castle Ford in the subdivision, you know, plotting. So the name of Castle Rouge was brought about. Again, I am a city planner. I know these. The number for the Radio Patrol, finally, I got smarter than my smartphone, is 313-757-0405. Again, that's 313-757-0405. The Radio Patrol has monthly meetings as well. They meet on the first Tuesday of each month at 6:30 at the YMCA Detroit Leadership Academy. And the General Association, we meet the second Tuesday of each month, same time, same location. I saw another hand. Excellent question. The Radio Patrol as well, they do request dues of $25 an hour. It's never mandatory to be a member with the Radio Patrol to have to pay the dues. You can go in, you can volunteer. It's nice to pay. The money that you pay goes towards the oscillating lights. It goes towards the magnets that we place on the vehicles. It's mandated by the city of Detroit that we have those things. The Radio Patrol was initially instituted in the 1980s by the city of Detroit. Right now we're under the auspices of the Detroit Police Department. So we have bylaws and guidelines that we have to go to in addition to all of their regulations. Two riders per car, no one riding in the car is allowed to be armed with any weapon of any sort. So it's kind of hard to get off-duty police officers to patrol. We used to have radios that we now use cell phones. We used to have radios that were issued by the city that was discontinued about 2 years ago, primarily because the radios never seemed to work. They seem to, the calls that we make, since we're technically part of Old Redford, I'm not exactly sure when this community was annexed into the city of Detroit. However, we're right at the Detroit-Redford border. So if you're on your cell phone and you call 911, the first person that you get, they're the Redford police. So they have to transfer you to the Detroit Police Department. But fortunately, as of late, our association has worked out a deal with the Redford Police Department, since I raised the question as to why does the Redford Police Department often stop motorists in our neighborhood when we're Detroit and they're collecting that revenue? Why don't you just come into our community and patrol, since you're kind of doing it anyway? And they agreed. So now the Redford Police Department does routine patrols through our neighborhood. Well, the Redford Police, as it relates to those issues, not so much. They will still transfer us to the Detroit Police Department. It's a jurisdictional issue. They do help us out with patrols. So if the Redford Police do see anything while they're patrolling, they'll respond. But as it relates to calls, those calls are still routed to the Detroit Police Department. And, you know, contrary to what you see in the media, the police department, they really do respond. They really do. I was out patrolling with a new neighbor of mine who just moved into the community last month, and we were going up and down the streets. I was showing him the route, and a young lady flagged us down. She was riding in the back of a car and said, "Yeah, that maroon car that just drove by, that was my car. It was stolen." So I'm like, "Oh my goodness." So, you know, we did a follow, you know, about a block behind, you know, exercising caution, immediately got on the phone with the Detroit Police Department. Within 24 hours, her car was recovered and four young men were apprehended. Yes, ma'am.
Another question for you. You've got three churches in the vicinity?
Yes, we have St. Raphael of Brooklyn, we have St. Paul of the Cross, and we have the Kingdom Hall of the Jehovah's Witnesses, which are located right at Outer Drive and Schoolcraft. On the other side of the freeway, we actually have a fourth church, although they're part of Brightmoor and not part of Castle Rouge proper, which is Gotland Unity. And they've been gracious to us over the years and have allowed us to utilize their facility for meetings when, with the previous congregation, issues had arisen with members rolling around this facility scaring monastic monks. They're in the process of developing programs. I know that with Gotland Unity particularly, the First Lady of the church is also a state senator, so lots of governmental programs and fairs and things she brings to that facility for the community in terms of social welfare type activities. And the efforts that are being started here at St. Raphael, as well as some efforts that are taking place at the YMCA Detroit Leadership Academy, are making a huge impact on the lives of the people in this community and those that attend those institutions.
Well, the thing about ministry, as we all know, is that the work really has to be done on the ground where we are. So when we start to think of, you know, in terms of what is it that being part of a network of ministries really provides, well, it provides best practices, experiences that we learn. There's material support that we can get. Focus North America was very critical and getting a 501c3 immediately, you know, putting up a website immediately. Some of those material support really helped get things off the ground. Not to mention, there are some, at times, you know, national networks that, if we tap into, can strengthen our local efforts. So all of that's true. Now, that said, when it comes to doing ministry, when it comes to doing programming locally, this is where the work is. We have to understand that when we get into it, that we establish a program right here and right now, no one's going to know our community but us. No one's going to be going out and establishing partnerships but us. Nobody's going to be going out and figuring out what the needs of each community, because every community is different but us. You know, to get involved in this, there's certainly benefits to being part of a national network and having national support. But even, you know, even fundraising, you know that terrible word. But giving is a ministry too, isn't it? Giving is a ministry. St. John Chrysostom said, the rich exist for the poor, and the poor exist for the salvation of the rich. Things like fundraising, you know, we have to do that locally. We might be able to get some help nationally, but we have to do that work locally. This has to be a ministry that everybody here is in full support of. Otherwise, a national network isn't productive. So I hope that, does that help a little bit answer? Thank you, Father.
Oh, sure. That was a small clip of The Interrupters, which was produced by the same director of Hoop Dreams, for anybody who saw that, and the author of There Are No Children Here, and put out on Frontline PBS. So it's been put out nationally. You can buy it on Netflix. You can buy it on Amazon. One important disclaimer is I showed you a very sanitized clip of the documentary. And there are some really hard things to see in the documentary. You see young people being buried. There's some foul language. There's no extreme profanity. There's nothing that I don't think there's anything that would give people nightmares, but in the sense that it's a very stark reality that's portrayed in the documentary. So Netflix, Amazon. You could probably find a bootleg version on Amazon or on YouTube, but I'm not supposed to say that. So, yeah.
Something called, when did you start your organization? I mean, just listening to your presentation, it sounds like you've been going for 10 years. How long have you been
in November, really December of 2010, we started organizing to do this work. By January, I had become the director of the organization, Focus Pittsburgh, and we established a presence in the Hill District in July of 2011. So in less than 1 year, we have We've mobilized, I think, 11 different ministry teams, employment assistance, psychosocial, medical, food, clothing. I often can't remember them off the top of my head, especially this late in the evening. But and about 11 different, 12 now, 12 different ministries. So there's computer classes. We have employment assistance programming. Obviously, the clothing pantry, the food pantry. We have a backpack feeding program for children that are in the free reduced lunch feeding program in school. They are not eating on the weekends. So we have a backpack feeding program that gives them four meals every weekend. We have a hot meal every Wednesday evening we call Community Unity Dinner. We have we have two violence prevention classes. We have AA meetings. We have counseling and case management, all those sorts of things. And the reason why we were able to do all of this so quickly is because, really, there was a lot of people within the church who felt called to do this work. And what we found is that there were people who were not lukewarm. They were hot. They were hot for this ministry. And they began to take their expertise and they began to sacrifice for this ministry. They sacrificed financially. They sacrificed with their time. You know, Marco Pasek, he's an Orthodox Christian. He was a parole agent, and he did a lot of training. He did a lot of policy procedure, all this and that. When he realized that we were going to be doing this work, we realized, you know, as a community, we realized that we were going to be put in some difficult situations. We realized that we needed training. Marco Pasek, he was a parole agent for 28 years, had all this experience, had connections, had resources. He established a training program for volunteers, and it took a whole lot of time. And after he established an initial training orientation, he set up a 14-week training session with one session each week on a different topic. 1 week was hunger in our region. 1 week was mental illness. 1 week was domestic abuse. 1 week was homelessness, et cetera, et cetera. He sacrificed a great deal to do that. He sacrificed a great deal of time to do that, but he felt called to do that. We accomplished a great deal by the grace of God in 1 year. And again, the Lord blessed, because there were a lot of people who, feeling called, stepped forward and took up their cross and followed Christ. And if we do that, brothers and sisters, the Holy Spirit will yield great fruit. There are hundreds, really. There are hundreds from the Orthodox community who are involved. I would say maybe between 200 and 300, maybe, in different capacities. And the thing is that there's not everybody can, right? Not everybody can come down here and volunteer and do work all the time. There's other ways that people could get involved. There's one woman who, she's an event planner by trade. She enjoys it. She recognizes the need for it. So she comes down, or she wants to throw events to support the ministry. She doesn't come down because she doesn't have the time to come down. And it's very difficult. She works, you know, she's married. She has a life that makes it very difficult. But she uses their time and her gifts to support the ministry like that. We had, we also recognize that, for example, we had to track and organize the programs, track the people's progress and developments, that it was important to track that in an organized manner so that we knew what we were doing, so that we could know what was not effective and what was, where we could change. So there was a group of folks who had expertise in IT. There was a few folks in the church. We found This is what they did. These are the talents they had. Their job was developing EMR, electronic medical records, or EHRs, electronic health records. And we realized very quickly that with this, we could not only track medical information, but we could build onto it and collect information about housing, employment, about other things as well. We could tailor to what we needed. They ran with it. The whole computer class that we offer was established by an orthodox man who works for Google. And so he realized this is his talent. And so he wants to put together this computer class. So he did that. He put together a curriculum for people that have never touched a computer before. And he teaches it, and people assist him in teaching that. You know, they walk around and they say, he says, you know, move the mouse here and that, and people don't know, well, where's the X and all this, right? So people walk around, they say, move the mouse a little bit more this way, click this button that way. There's many different ways that people are really involved, and really hundreds are involved. There's also hundreds of people that are coming through the ministry as well. In the first 4 months of this year, we distributed $50,000 worth of food, clothing, and furniture. There are, 300 people receive clothing on average per month alone. There's a lot of people that are coming through. So when we start, as long as we understand that when people have the opportunity to, when we have the opportunity to use our talents to serve the Lord, people get very, very excited because it's a dream come true. Just to go back to Marco Pasek, he said to me not long ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, he said he had always wondered, he was a man of deep faith who had dedicated his life to the service of the Lord, and he had never felt that he had been able to do that. He always wondered, why is he going through all these classes? Why is he going through all these trainings? Why is he have all this organizational experience with the Pennsylvania State Parole Board? Why? What does that have to do with the church? And here, it was his prayer that this have some purpose in the ministry of the church. It was his prayer that this be unto his own salvation. And he has found that his prayer has been answered, that he now finds purpose in his spiritual life, in all of the training, in all of the time that he spent in the Pennsylvania State Parole Board, transforming lives. And we're learning a little bit more about what ministry actually is and how the Holy Spirit leads us to use our talents to the glory of God. You know, it was very grassroots. It was very grassroots. You know, we have Focus North America formed in 2009, and you know, everybody was wondering, well, where's this ministry going to spread? There were two ladies who saw a Focus North America booth at some convention. I think it was in Atlanta. They're from the Philoptochos at one of the parishes in Pittsburgh. And they thought it was really neat. But they were thinking of Focus the way that I suppose we think of IOCC. They think, well, this is something that we can support that's far away from us. So they came home back to Pittsburgh from this Philoptochos convention. And they said, listen, ladies, we saw something really neat. And we think we should have a tea and raise some money for it. Okay, and so they started. They call up at that time Father Justin Matthews, and they say he's, we'd like to have a tea, a fundraiser, and all this. And so they were talking about a fundraiser, and people started asking, "What are we drinking tea for?" Well, then they start to realize that, wait a second, maybe we could do this here, and. And of course, one of the things that really helped is that Paula Mullahs were in Pittsburgh, and they had made a decision to support this ministry. And, you know, everybody loves the Steelers in Pittsburgh. And, you know, when Theodora Polamalu, Troy Polamalu's wife, said, you know, this is something that I want to get behind, they started to have meetings, not just in one parish, but Orthodox Christians from all over Pittsburgh came together, and they set up three teams. I think one to find the who, one to find the what, and one to find the where. And, you know, whatever fruit came from those conversations, what actually happened is there was a whole lot of excitement. And people started to believe that, you know, we could do this. Now, I'll tell you that one of the things that was really, this sort of entertains me when I'm looking back at it is, you know, I often remember I was in the army, and I was in the war in Iraq. Now, I often remember I was in the invasion, and they ordered us, obviously, to get to Baghdad. And I remember thinking, when we finally made it to Baghdad, the reaction was, oh my Lord, they're at Baghdad. In other words, this is what we wanted to do, but now we've actually done it. Now what? It was a moment of panic. You know, I had that same experience in this ministry, because there was a period of excitement where we said, this is what we're going to do, and this is great, and this is, and then all of a sudden we realized that we were heading into the heart of a very difficult community that had never heard of who we were before. And there was a moment of panic among many. So we have to prepare ourselves for that. You know, the spark leads to excitement. But remember that it's in that moment that temptation will truly come to us. We must remain committed and trust that the Lord will provide.
I would say first that, so Chicago is an enormous city, and, you know, my neighborhood has 100,000 residents, which is the size of some cities. So it's a little bit of a beast, like when you look at a unified force, and we have, I think, over 80 Orthodox churches in the metropolitan area, which we only see each other on the Sunday of Orthodoxy. So, you know, I think a couple years ago, with some friends, we organized something called Agape Chicago, which is basically a listserv promoting volunteer opportunities in Chicago, based in churches and not based in churches. And we had an overwhelming response from the youth, positive, and an overwhelming negative response from adults and some church leadership that were thinking we were leading some like ecumenical movement, that what are we doing? We're stealing youth from different churches. What is this? Where's the blessing? And so church politics actually stunted, you know, all of this. And we thought, we're just sending out a newsletter with volunteer opportunities. You know, what are we doing wrong? And so we, you know, requested a meeting with the leading hierarch in Chicago. And he kind of gave like a lukewarm, like, okay, let's meet again sometime. And then that was it. So what I have seen in the parishes that I've given presentations in, and even the parish that I'm involved in, is that there's an overwhelming amount of, just like Paul said, goodwill, who people want to feel like they have purpose and meaning behind the work that they do and the talents that they have, and they want it to be connected to their faith. And, you know, I'm praying a lot in Chicago for something to take root, something local. We're not talking about the whole diocese of Chicago and all 80 Orthodox churches, but if we have a storefront in somewhere on the west side or the south side, or we have a consistent presence in some neighborhood or doing some project, that there I'm hoping that God will multiply that and bless that, and then from there we can grow. But it's a challenge. Focus did try to take root in Chicago, and that was a hot mess, and so, you know, we'll see. Amen. So, yeah.
So just
Could you break that down into like two or three questions? That was just,
well, okay. For consistency.
Okay.
Coalition building and leveraging the coalition towards larger dollars. Okay. That's basically the gist of it.
Oh man. Okay, coalition building. I can just start. I mean, I think, Paul, you could speak more to leveraging faith-based communities, right? I'm more in the work of leveraging community-based partners, of which churches are a part of, but I think Paul can speak more to, especially within the Orthodox community, that, you know, for any coalition, there has to be a common purpose and a shared vision. And so if it's around violence prevention, for example, who are the people who are invested in public safety? If it's a mental health, you know, collaborative, what, you know, increasing access to services or increasing awareness of mental health problems. So there has to be, I guess, some level of definition in looking who are the stakeholders and the people who are most affected by the problem. You know, I think the best community organizers are not the ones who are at the forefront of the campaign or whatever the issue is, but the people who are most affected by it. So if you're having a foreclosure campaign, it should be people who've been evicted from their houses because of, you know, subprime loans and they couldn't afford it. So they should be at the forefront of it. And that's what a real organizer in a strong coalition should do. I don't know.
Right. And I would say, you know, I would say two things. I don't know that this is a textbook answer, but this is certainly my experience. You know, I was, last fall, through a strange set of circumstances, got an invitation to this White House conference on government partnership with faith-based organizations. So here was the premise of the conversation, right? So our government has a problem, economic recovery. This is the sort of the phrase, right, that everybody's hanging on now, economic recovery. Is it going to be a double-dip recession? Are there more jobs every month? Are we losing more jobs every month? If we look at the statistics, economic recovery, what has occurred, has been uneven in our underserved communities. They have been hardest hit. I mean, unemployment is higher in the underserved communities. It has gotten higher since this whole mess began, and it isn't improving the way it needs to be. So here was the premise of the conversation. Okay, from the government's perspective, it was a very different conversation than we as Christians are probably used to. There was an acknowledgement there that these were very serious problems, and that if we're looking at the government who's in power, who wants re-election, and economic recovery is what's important, then we have got to reach out to the entities that have been supporting these communities all these years. In other words, we have to understand that there's a lot of people who say they do a lot of things. When we look at what's been supporting these neighborhoods for years, it's the churches. In other words, if they want to make their dollars count, they need to give the dollars to who is doing the work. And we understand now, and I think we're getting more comfortable as a nation about giving dollars to faith-based organizations, and it's because we're confronted with reality. It is our faith that compels us to act in an effective way. And these churches are making huge differences in underserved communities. They have transformed communities. You know, it is where transformation begins and occurs. It's where organization starts, in the churches, in these communities. We have to understand that first and leverage that position and speak from that position. That, listen, the churches are doing the work that needs done. The second part that's incredibly important is relationships. Right, because we are relational beings. Just 2 days ago, this building across the street from us, it's much larger than the one we're in now. And we're at capacity. We can't fit our growth. We need a bigger space. And the Urban Redevelopment Authority is this it's a public entity, basically the city of Pittsburgh's real estate agency. They own this property. So we, with the help of Brian Albert, was very crucial in this actually, and some others. We started conversations with the URA and eventually walked to that building. So we're walking through this building, and the woman from the URA says, well, there's a lot of interest in this building. I will tell you, there's a lot of people who want to walk through this building, but you were the only ones we let in. So she goes on to explain that the reason why she let us in is because she received an email from a staffer of our state senator who I had met with. And I went there with one of his old mentors who had grown up in the Orthodox Church. We went there and we had a conversation, and he said to the state senator, you gotta listen to this kid. They're doing the work on the streets, and nobody's doing the work on the streets. That's all we had to hear. Next day, his staffer sends an email to the URA, let these guys walk through that building. So she understands that we are, from their perspective, a powerful entity. We understand who we are and the work that we're doing and the impact that it's having, one. And two, we understand and cultivate the relationships that enable us to get the dollars, get the buildings, have the partnerships to increase programming.
I said about 2 weeks ago, if one more person told me that I should run for mayor, I might actually consider doing it. Well, council's going by districts first. I think I might start off by running in this district first for council. Got a heavy hitter here running for state rep, so I might hold off on that. But thanks to term limits, you know, maybe in a few years.
When I was in seminary at St. Tikhon's, our dean was, at that time, Father, now Bishop Michael Dehulich, who's an amazing spiritual father. One of the things that he taught us, he said, if you want your parish to grow, you have to have a full-time priest. In other words, in the church, growth occurs when we have leadership. Doesn't it? When we say we're going to take one person who dedicates their life to organizing this ministry. When we do that, that leadership, just one person who dedicates their life to organizing the ministry, that's what happens. Growth. And without that, we can never reach our potential. And one person is not enough. I mean, you need many as a full-time staff. But I will say that it all starts with one. Now, to have one person to dedicate their lives to do this, it means the community has to make a sacrifice. because that person has to live, you know? They have to pay their bills. They have to have a place to live. You know, they might have a family or whatever. So leadership is what's needed. The community has to sacrifice for that leadership. It's important to understand that going forward.
Well, Castle Rouge is very unique as in our size really doesn't, our size and location for one really don't allow us to have, you know, traditional businesses. We are 95% residential. We have two educational structures, one which is occupied, one which is vacant, and then we have the three churches. Unfortunately, we don't have a business or commercial strip within our boundaries. Again, we're less than 1 square mile of the city of Detroit, and we're literally at the edge of the Detroit-Redford border. So the one business that would fall within our boundaries, that being the Marathon gas station, which we're now trying to forge a relationship with, technically is in Redford, because the dividing line is the alley between the backyards of the houses on Dell Street and the Marathon gas station on Telegraph. They're now under new management, and we've had issues with the past owners, and we're in the process of addressing issues with the current owners in terms of maintenance and, you know, keeping their property, you know, clean and presentable. They're cutting the grass regularly. We're working on them picking up the trash. Ironically, the previous owners had purchased a home in our neighborhood directly around the corner from the gas station, and the new owners were unaware that they owned it when they purchased the new property, so the grass went uncut for several months, but now they're maintaining that property and cutting the grass. So that's really the only business that we have within our boundaries. However, we are reaching out to partner with surrounding businesses. Just north of our community, along Telegraph, there's a little strip mall, the Tel 96 something strip mall, with, you know, a number of stores and businesses. When we do our annual picnic and back to school rally, we write letters and do face visits with those business owners and let them know about the activities that we have coming up. We request either financial support, or if they're able to purchase school supplies for the neighborhood children in need, we ask of that. Earlier this month, on the 2nd, I had the privilege of walking in the Relay for Life in Redford, and I had the opportunity to meet the chief coordinator for that effort for Detroit Diesel, which is located directly to the south of our neighborhood. And I informed her about, you know, the efforts that we have in our community, and we would love to partner with them and seeing what they do as it relates to the cancer walk, and see if they could be of any financial help or provide us with any type of resources. And they indicated that, you know, that's something that they try to set at the end of the calendar year for the following year, but we exchanged information, and, you know, we're in the running for next year for their support. So those are some efforts that we've taken on to try to reach out to the local businesses outside of our borders, but that still impact our community, and especially those that our community utilize. Our boundaries are from Telegraph to Otter Drive, Fullerton, which is where the railroad tracks are, to Schoolcraft. So we're kind of, you know, if this were Telegraph, Fullerton, then it kind of curves up around the Rouge River and the green space, which is the grounds of St. Paul of the Cross, to Schoolcraft and Otter Drive. So those are our boundaries.
Sure. I realized actually listening that there are a few things that came to mind that I didn't mention, and I should give my respects to. There is an Orthodox maternity home that's beginning in Chicago that I've been on the board for the past couple of years. There's a Greek Orthodox priest, Father Nicholas Jonas, who's in Palos Heights, the south suburb, who's felt a personal calling to start a maternity home. And there's a coalition in Chicago called Orthodox Christians for Life. They're very actively involved in pro-life campaigns and issues and contacting legislators. And so I was kind of brought in as like the social work person who could talk about programming. And they were exploring different options. Obviously, the most important thing is needing a physical structure to have women in crisis who are pregnant. And a family in Wheaton donated their gorgeous multimillion-dollar house because they're moving to Florida to have a maternity home. So there will be, within the next couple of years, this a maternity home for pregnant women in crisis in the west suburb of Chicago. And then actually St. George Antiochian Orthodox Church applied for a federal grant called Drug-Free Communities to do drug-free programming and outreach within the Orthodox community, and they're doing that in the north suburbs. So they were awarded a multi-year, you know, several thousand dollars, $100,000 a year grant to do some, you know, drug-free programming with kids. So there is some groundwork, you know, in terms of a focus center. Obviously, this is something that I think a lot of people are praying for. But I hope to reflect that through those efforts that there are people who are thirsting for something like a center, you know, an Orthodox cafe, an Orthodox outreach center, you know, something where people from all the different jurisdictions, churches can come together and serve alongside each other. So keep us in your prayers.
Thank you.
Thank you.